This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. There's a group of Bible-believing, Bible-preaching Christians in this world who've been creating an interesting statistic for decades. Seems they live longer than most everyone else. The question is, why? Loma Linda University's School of Public Health is trying to find the answer to that question by studying the life and health habits of 96,000 of these unique people in what's called the Adventist Health Study 2. And I'm proud to say that I got one of the main movers and shakers of that ongoing research with us today, Dr. Michael Orlich. Welcome to HeartWise.
Oh, thank you very much.
So tell us about these strange creatures who can boast a half dozen years more of longevity than their neighbors, and are you one of those strange creatures?
Well, the population that we study is Seventh-day Adventists in North America.
Uh-huh.
It's a denomination that arose in the mid-19th century and has placed a high emphasis on dietary reforms and health care and that sort of thing. And so they tend to avoid smoking and drinking alcohol, and also advocate a healthy diet and advocate the preference of a vegetarian diet. And so a substantial minority of the group are vegetarians, and that makes them quite interesting to study. And yes, I do happen to be a member of the church.
Well, so am I. And as a matter of fact, I'm a member of the Adventist Health Study 2, as I was of Health Study 1. Now, the question I want to ask you, one of the main questions I want to ask you here to begin with, Dr. Orlich, is if you follow a group of Adventists into a restaurant, like you say, a lot of them are going to order meat, a lot of them are going to order dairy, some of them are not going to order dairy or meat, some of them are going to be vegan, some are going to be whole food plant-based. They are all over the place. How can you determine something from a group so diverse?
Well, actually, that diversity is one of the biggest advantages for this population, because early studies did compare the rates of chronic disease and death among Adventists compared to their neighbors. These were California Adventists compared to other Californians.
Uh-huh.
But that leaves a big question as to why the benefits that were seen were there. And so our more recent studies, including the current large study, are not comparing these Adventist participants to the general public, but rather comparing within the Adventist population to try to identify which factors, particularly possibly dietary factors, may contribute to advantages within the study. So it's very helpful to have a large number of vegans and a large number of vegetarians who do eat dairy products and eggs, as well as a large number of non-vegetarians, et cetera, in order to compare those groups.
And just a little mechanics on this thing. You sent out questionnaires a number of years ago for those who were involved in the study. I filled mine out, as did my wife. And these questionnaires were very detailed in what we ate, how we felt, when we went and see the doctor, what our conditions were. As you started crunching the numbers here, did you find anything different than you expected? Did you find any surprises waiting for you in the data?
Well, just to follow up on what you were saying about how the study is conducted, the study is funded by the National Cancer Institute, one of the National Institutes of Health, to study the relationship between diet and cancer.
Okay.
And we enrolled the population between 2002 and 2007, and it's called a longitudinal cohort or prospective cohort, which means a large group that we measure various aspects of their lifestyle and history at the beginning, and then we follow them over a long period of time to be able to make comparisons in how long they live or what their rates of cancer or other diseases are. In terms of surprising findings, probably the most surprising finding that we've had came from our previous study that was enrolled in the 70s. We call it Adventist Health Study 1. It was about 33,000 California Seventh-day Adventists. And the important, somewhat surprising finding from that study was the benefit of nut consumption for reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, etc. Nuts are a high-fat food, and it was thought at the time that, if anything, perhaps they would increase your risk of heart disease. And the Adventist Health Study was the first study to establish that there was an apparent reduction in risk. And that has been confirmed since by many other studies, and nuts are now viewed as an extremely healthy food.
How did you extrapolate the idea that nut consumption is good for you? Maybe those who ate nuts also walked more. Maybe they were more health conscious. How did you make sure that you were not identifying one solution when it really came from someplace else?
That's a very good question, and it's not an easy thing to do, actually. The gold standard is a randomized controlled trial, right, where you eliminate confusing possibilities where one behavior that you're trying to study is associated with others by randomizing people to that behavior. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work very well for diet, because you would have to randomize people and then sort of force them or get them to eat a certain diet for many years. Yes. It's very hard to do and very expensive. So the type of research we do is observational, and we rely on trying to measure all of the other lifestyle factors that may be related and may be actually causing something. And then we put them all in complicated statistical models and try to tease out which factor is actually contributing. But we can't always say that for sure. And so we have to be hesitant about saying this causes this just from an observational study. But it's an important amount of evidence to bring to bear.
Okay, so I guess the bottom line would be that if you are a meat eater or if you are a vegan, if you eat more nuts, you will tend to have better outcomes as far as heart disease is concerned, right?
For heart disease, that seems pretty clear. It also seems to be beneficial in regards to obesity and diabetes. And there's some evidence coming out about cancer, but that's not so clear yet.
You know, as I've been watching the health study move along and the data you've been sending out in your newsletters and whatnot, I'm noticing something here, that there tends to be a direction that someone can take, and the further they go down this path, the better their health is. Have you identified that path that I've been seeing? Have you guys been seeing it as well?
We certainly do see sort of a stair-step pattern when we compare five dietary patterns that we've identified: the vegan pattern, the lacto-ovo-vegetarian pattern, the pesco-vegetarian pattern or pescatarian, and the semi-vegetarian, and then finally the non-vegetarian. If you think of that as sort of a spectrum from the most vegetarian to the least vegetarian, in a number of health outcomes such as body weight or obesity, blood pressure, something called the metabolic syndrome, which is a number of risk factors, diabetes, it appears that the farther you are towards the vegetarian side of the spectrum or the vegan side of the spectrum, the more benefit there is. In terms of cancer risk, that's not entirely clear yet, and that's why we're continuing to study.
Now, when I was going to school and I would take a test, the teacher would do something interesting. He or she would take out the worst scores and the best scores and just sort of lop them off and then come out with an average in there. Are you doing the same thing here? Because there have been smokers and drinkers who've lived to 110, and there have been whole food plant-based people who died at 38. Do you somehow screen for this kind of situation?
No, we don't really. We just take all comers and then we look for the general trends. And so if you sort of plot things out, you might see a few outliers on either end.
Right.
And if you're just doing anecdotal testimonies, those outliers can seem impressive, but we're sort of looking for average effects. We don't eliminate the outliers or the unusual things, but when you look at a very large group of people, it becomes clear that those unusual situations are few in number, and you see the general trend.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Orlich. He is one of the main researchers of the Adventist Health Study 2. This is an ongoing study that's been going since 2007, 8, thereabouts, and it's been studying members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and finding out if when these people, these Seventh-day Adventists who go to church, who worship God, who pray, who believe in a life to come, are there other factors in their lives that are creating better health for some and not for others? And why they have a longevity that seems to be longer than most people in the world? They're finding out some good things here, and Dr. Orlich has been telling us about that. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, more about this. I want to find out some of the most powerful weapons that this study has shown that we can use to fight disease. So stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham, and here's your biblical prescription for life. Have you ever longed for a different prescription, one without dangerous side effects? Everyone is concerned, or should be concerned, about side effects or adverse reactions when taking a medication. Well, today I want to explain to you what a biblical prescription is. Let's turn to James 1:5. This is our biblical prescription for today. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. Well, a biblical prescription is all about asking God for wisdom. Wisdom from the scriptures to prevent and treat disease. The Bible applies to all aspects of life. In our biblical prescription for life segments, I will point out scripture, show the evidence-based science behind the scripture, and how this scripture chemically changes us. For more information, I want you to go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
I'd like to think that one day, when we get to heaven, we're going to see a list of people. People like Jared and Susan, who were introduced to Jesus because of something we said. Or maybe it was as simple as a passing smile. But these people will look into their past and be able to say, "I'm here because of you." Recently, you may have heard that Heartwise Ministries has begun spreading the gospel to the young, the old, the sick, and the healthy. We want to take this type of medical programming to the non-believer and the person who has closed themselves off to traditional forms of outreach. If you believe as we do and want to support Heartwise so that together we can count more names on the Tree of Life, please consider donating today at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Dr. Michael Orlich. He is the main researcher for the Adventist Health Study 2. He's with the Loma Linda University School of Public Health out in California, and he's studying people like me and people like him, members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. There are 96,000 people in this study, thereabouts. And they're finding some interesting facts that there are steps that we can take to increase our chances to live longer and live healthier. And I want to make sure that we understand something here, Dr. Orlich. When we say live longer, are we also saying that those in the studies who live longer also live better? Or are they simply kept alive in a nursing home someplace and just happen to be around and have more birthdays?
That's a good question, and certainly a very important one. It's a little bit hard to study that, because usually when we determine whether somebody has lived longer in a very large group like this, we're determining that through statistics that are kept from death certificates. Mm-hmm. And so we don't always know subjectively how the last few years of their life were. To get that, we'd have to have all of their medical records, and it all requires a lot of labor and cost.
Sure.
But generally, the reason that people with healthier lifestyles live longer is because they're avoiding certain chronic diseases that tend to cause premature mortality. And if you're avoiding those diseases or delaying the onset of those diseases, you're generally going to have more years of healthy, productive life, less disability, less suffering, and that sort of thing. It seems that the Adventists that we have studied tend to die from the same things that everybody else does, mm-hmm. heart disease and cancer and that sort of thing. But on average, they don't get those as early and they don't die from them as early. And so you're delaying disease and then delaying mortality. So yes, it does seem that generally with a healthy lifestyle, you're having a longer life, but also a longer healthy life.
Are you also looking in this study, Dr. Orlich, whether there are other factors that are involved here, like church attendance or prayer life or relationship with family, or are we just studying the nutritional habits of these people?
With our large study of 96,000, our main purpose is to study diet and the risk of cancer, and funded, as I said, by the National Cancer Institute for that purpose. However, there is a subgroup of the 96,000 that's about 10,000 people, and that's referred to as the Biopsychosocial Religion and Health Study. And that group of 10,000 was funded by the National Institute for Aging, and the people in that group took an additional long questionnaire, and some of them came into clinics as well. And they reported on various factors of religious faith and practice, social supports, psychological factors, and those kinds of things. So we do have a small team of researchers who is looking at spiritual, psychological, and religious factors and how they may impact health.
I like that, because I know as a scientist, not only are you a physician, you're also a scientist. They go hand in hand. To make a blanket statement is not what you guys do. That's just not the way you work. You want to have the scientific data to back that up. And so I'm so glad that this Adventist Health Study 2 is looking for that scientific data to sort of give support to what we've always thought. We've always figured that there must be benefits to loving God and God loving us. There must be benefits to having forgiveness in our hearts. There must be benefits to having a church life and a faith life and a spiritual life that is growing and dynamic. And I think that these studies will bring that out, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about those as we continue on. Okay, let's talk about nutrition here. What are the most powerful weapons your study has been showing that these 96,000 people are using to combat diseases across the board? What are we talking about here?
Nutrition is really complicated, and it's hard to relate specific nutritional factors to specific diseases that occur over many years. So many of the biggest results that we've seen thus far relating diet and cancer and chronic diseases have been with broad dietary patterns. And so we've seen a number of benefits with vegetarian dietary patterns. Now, when we say vegetarian, we define those as people who avoid certain meat and animal products. But when we look closely at those diets, say the vegan or lacto-ovo-vegetarian diet compared to the non-vegetarian diet, we see that they're not just avoiding meat and or dairy products and eggs as per the definition of those diets,
right,
but they're simultaneously eating less sugar-sweetened foods, sweets, desserts, that kind of thing, less added fats, less refined foods, and an increase in a number of whole plant foods. So when we say that in our study, vegetarians or vegans did better on a certain health outcome than non-vegetarians, it does not mean that it was just due to the absence of meat, but maybe due to the fact that these individuals are consuming less refined foods, less added sugars, and an increased number of fruits and vegetables as well.
I like that. I like that a lot, because it is demonstrating to us the complexity of health. But also, everything you've been saying here is within our power to follow. Would I be right in saying that?
Sure. We can all make choices as to the type of diets that we will follow. A diet can be sort of a hard thing to change for people, and people choose what they eat for many different reasons. Weight loss, for example, is notoriously difficult for people, but it's still something that we can choose. And even in large groups or society, our preferences and our practices can change over time. And that's one of the hopes with these types of studies, is to identify factors that many people throughout the country can change in the way they live in order to have better health.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We're talking with Dr. Michael Orlich. He is the main researcher for the Adventist Health Study 2. Just down the sidewalk from you, that big white building, you know, called Loma Linda University Medical Center, are the doctors The doctors inside that building paying attention to what you're learning in your building, and are they changing the way they deal with patients and using some of the information you have been collecting to help treat things like heart disease or cancer?
I think so. Many of the physicians on the faculty here, and certainly interested physicians at other institutions around the country, I think do pay attention to these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Nutritional research is complicated, and there are a lot of controversies, but I think many physicians want to help their patients live more healthily and prevent a lot of these diseases. It can be very frustrating for a physician to see a patient come back and continue to decline when they could improve their health. Mm-hmm. And so it's a challenging area for both patient and physician, but I think everybody, the public as well as the medical community, is interested in learning more about how diet and lifestyle can influence our health risks.
And of course, Loma Linda University Medical Center is a teaching hospital. Do you have people from the school and people from the hospital coming together and talking about these things and trying to have a way of gearing up to address these issues in the actual education of future doctors there at Loma Linda?
Certainly. I think there's quite a bit of emphasis on these sort of approaches on prevention, on wholeness at the medical school and the other health professional schools here. Myself, I'm actually the program director of a graduate training program for certain physicians in preventive medicine. Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of emphasis physicians, young physicians and health professionals seeking to learn ways to keep their patients healthy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because, you know, I've been doing these programs for many years and was editor of Vibrant Life magazine and whatnot. And I'm saying, are we making a dent out there? Is a new generation coming along of young people who are saying, you know, that may have been fine from my dad or my grandfather, but when I want to learn how to be a doctor, I want to learn how to be a doctor that heals using methods that may not have been in practice over the past few years or decades or generations. Have you seen that happening at the hospital as well?
Yes, I think so. And even in the broader scope, I think we are making a dent. We who are studying health and seeking to promote health among the public, it seems like a lot of doom and gloom at times, mm-hmm. particularly when you see obesity going up and diabetes rates going up and that sort of thing. But cancer incidence has started to come down as people have reduced smoking and quit smoking. And so that's made a huge difference. And people don't realize that over the last 30 years or so, deaths from heart disease have gone down by about 50%.
Wow.
In spite of the increase in obesity and diabetes. And there are some signs that the obesity increase, particularly among children, is leveling off now. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the things that we've studied and the public health messages and the efforts of health educators and others, for example, Michelle Obama's campaign for activity and good nutrition in the schools, I think these things do have an effect. They take a long time to bend that curve or to, you know, change the direction of that massive ship, but they do make a difference, and so people shouldn't get too discouraged.
Oh, that is good news. It's good news from Dr. Michael Orlich. He is the main researcher at the Loma Linda University School of Public Health on the Avenus Health Study 2. Dr. Orlich, thank you so much. We'll have you back on in a year or so to find out how it's going out there with the study. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Orlich inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.